I'm Jeremy Hobson, broadcasting today from Wyoming in America's first national park. That would be Yellowstone National Park, and we are on the porch of Yellowstone's historic Old Faithful Inn, right across from Old Faithful, with Dan Wenk, who is the superintendent of the park. And Dan, I should say, right now, Old Faithful is any second now supposed to erupt.
It is. We're in the 10-minute interval in terms of plus or minus, and hopefully we'll see it while we're talking.
Explain what that means, because Old Faithful goes off about every 90 minutes or so, but there's always this plus or minus 10 minutes. If we're so sure about when it's going to erupt, why can't we know to the exact minute?
Because we're not that sure. Every eruption is different. Every eruption is a different time, a different volume of water. Therefore, it affects how long it takes the areas to refill with water before it erupts again. So the best we can do is plus or minus 10 minutes.
And it's never not erupted in its 90-minute or window.
It's very rarely it will skip an interval. Hopefully that won't be.
Hopefully that won't happen right now. That would be sad. So let's talk about some of the challenges at the park. And right now, where we're sitting, if you look over the hill at certain times of day, you can see some smoke rising from a fire that has been burning. How worried are you, or at what point do you get worried about some of the fires that are burning in the park?
Well, we're concerned about every fire. But the fires that are burning right now are providing tremendous resource benefit to Yellowstone National Park. Interestingly enough, yesterday they became a size of the largest complex of fires burning in Yellowstone since 1988. But 88, it was over 800,000 acres. Right now, we're about 26,000 acres in total. But these fires are providing great benefit to the resources of Yellowstone and actually providing the kind of mosaic on the landscape that we need to manage fire effectively into the future.
What do you mean they're providing great benefit?
Well, they're regenerating the vegetation. There's some areas of meadows that were really overgrown in terms of the grasses, that we were not getting the kind of production we needed in those grasses to provide a food source for bison and for elk and for other animals. So that's being taken care of.
Are you seeing more fires, though, as a result of climate change?
You know, we're seeing a longer fire season. Typically, 30 to 50 years ago, the fire season would last from July through the end of August. We're now well into September, where if we have starts, we have to be really concerned about where those fire starts are and what kind of resources they could impact.
How else is Yellowstone being affected by climate change?
Well, we have I think the biggest difference in Yellowstone is it's not the hot temperatures are not, we don't see a lot more hot temperatures in Yellowstone, but we do see some of that. The biggest difference is we're not as cold as we used to be in Yellowstone. And so we don't have as many days of frost. We don't have as much snow production in the winter. The moisture, while it still may be coming in total, we're not having the snowpack, which affects downstream and affects the rivers and streams in terms of the fisheries. So it has a direct effect on the wildlife within the park.
There's another issue going on right now with the Yellowstone River. It's being called a crisis. Tens of thousands of fish are dying, and nearly 200 miles of the river is closed right now. What's going on there?
That's all outside of Yellowstone National Park, and it was a decision made by the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks to ensure that fishery is the best protected it can be. We are looking at the Yellowstone River within Yellowstone National Park to look at what kind of effects the parasite that they've discovered outside the park. We've not yet found any dead fish within the boundaries of Yellowstone National Park. We're trying to understand how this parasite might act and work. We have some different, they have different stressors outside the park than we do in terms of using water for irrigation, a lot more recreational use, a lot more fishery use. So we have a different set of circumstances, but we are looking at this to see if we need to take any additional actions. Right now, we've not made that determination.
And you don't believe that it's a threat to the park at the moment?
I believe it's a threat, but I'm not sure that we can do anything different than we're doing today to alleviate that threat. So we're just being very watchful and really trying to look at the science that would help us inform any decision-making that we might do.
What about the threat from people? We're sitting right now on this porch. There are a lot of visitors here who are looking out to Old Faithful to watch Old Faithful. There are a lot of visitors in this park, and we've been hearing about people walking off trails, which they're not supposed to do, damaging some of the geysers and the wilderness to get a picture. Is this park being loved to death?
I don't think I'd use the word love to death. I think this park is being stressed in terms of like never before, because we've had, last year was the highest level of visitation we've ever had on record. This year is going to be more. I think that people are trying to...
I want to stop you right there, because Old Faithful, you can hear the crowd reacting, has just erupted. I know you've probably seen this a million times, but...
You never get tired.
Pretty amazing. Wow. Why are we so... And we're going to get back to the crowds, but why are we so fascinated by this?
Well, there's only 300 of those in the world, and half of them are in Yellowstone National Park.
Yeah.
So it's a unique, almost a unique a phenomenon within the natural environment. It's something unexpected. It's something that really provides the awe factor beyond almost anything else that you can see in the park.
I've seen it maybe six times since I've been here over the last couple of days, and it's still, you still wait for it. You watch, you see it happen, and you wait until it's done. It's just incredible.
And it's always different. There's no two eruptions that are ever the same. You can be out here this time of the year versus the middle of the winter when it's 30 degrees below zero, and you can just, the difference in the effect that it has on people is pretty extraordinary.
And it's because we're sitting on top of a supervolcano.
We are indeed. The magma of the Earth is probably closer to the surface here than any place else on Earth.
And you're not worried about an eruption of that supervolcano?
Well, the geologists tell me I don't have to be worried today. It probably will happen someday. They say there's other things that are going on and with the geology of Yellowstone that's not our most immediate threat.
Okay, so let's get back to the threat we were talking about, which is the crowds here. You do not believe the park is being loved to death.
I think the park is being appreciated. I think that we're working very hard with visitors to help them help us protect this place. My biggest concern with visitors is whether or not the crowds are actually affecting their opportunity to enjoy and appreciate Yellowstone. So we have initiated a very robust social science program to really understand the levels of visitation, the effect it has on visitor experience, and the effect it has on the natural resources of the park. But no, not yet is it being loved to death.
Should there be a cap on the number of visitors coming to this park?
Maybe. I don't have the answer to that question yet, but through this social science program and through our resource management programs, I believe that we will get the science that will inform that decision. But it would be premature for me today to say that that's the right answer to the problem.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking with Dan Wenk, who is the superintendent of Yellowstone National Park. And by the way, we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the national parks. This is the first one, but it was actually not a national park, but kind of a national park even before 1916.
Well, it was a national park. It was the world's first national park, and it's because the states of no states existed in this area, and Congress carved this out of the territory, and they had no state to give it to, if you will. Mm. It was, in fact, called a national park, and it is the 144 years ago in 1872, and it has really set the standard for what national parks can be in terms of telling the natural history and the cultural history of our country, and well over 100 countries throughout the world have public lands or protected areas that do much of what was started at Yellowstone National Park.
You've had a long career yourself in the Park Service, and now you're in charge of the flagship park in the system. Where could you possibly go from here?
Nowhere. This is a great assignment. You know, my predecessors did a great job setting me up to have an opportunity to continue their good work in Yellowstone National Park. It's a place that is, I think, really helps to set the tone for what management of protected areas should be throughout the world. This is a job that I aspired to, and was incredibly fortunate enough to be sitting in this chair to have the opportunities we have to protect this place and provide great opportunities for people to visit and to enjoy.
And your favorite place in this park is?
You know, my favorite place is probably as far as you can get away from the roads, and you can be farther away from a road in Yellowstone National Park than any place else in the lower 48. But in the thoroughfare area of Yellowstone, where you can really see, I think, what this country looked like, you know, as part of, if you will, primitive America, and really see what the natural landscape was and can be still if we take proper care of it.
That's Dan Wenk, the superintendent of Yellowstone National Park, joining us live here on the porch at the Old Faithful Inn, and we just saw Old Faithful erupt. Dan Wenk, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.